You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the couch, everybody, as you always are here on Tuesdays at 12 noon Pacific Standard Time with me, your host, Dr. Michelle Cohen. And today, as always, we have a fabulous guest. And I've had her on several times before because of her book, which is amazing to me and really helped me a lot in my journey. So today, when I'm talking about a journey, I'm talking about going through grief and sort of how to cope with that and understand that and surviving the loss of our loved ones, whoever they may be, and also getting through that. And our topic today is about shared death experiences. Now, y'all have heard about NDEs, near-death experiences. They're all out there. You know, so many books of people who've experienced those, and also some of the quantum conscious authors who talk about that and the possibility of the surviving of the consciousness. Well, we're talking about a great book today with the amazing author, Dr. Sharon Prentice. And here she comes. Hi, Sharon.
Hey, how are you?
Great to have you here. I've been talking already too much this morning, so cheers.
No, I have my big bottle of water, too. Unfortunately, it has a lot of ice in it, so I've got to let you
go. There you go. It's great to see you, honey. Great
you
to see
you. Too. Person. It's so good to be with you again.
Oh, you too. I call Sharon my sister from another mother because we have so much in common. And, of course, she is a doctor and a well-known psychotherapist with a thriving practice and also an amazing author. Her book is The Real Deal. It's not one of my listeners regularly, but I put it out on social media, wrote me back and said, is this another woo-woo book about the afterlife? And I said, no, please. You know, I have these folks who write me. It's not. It's an amazing journey. It's called Becoming Starlight, A Shared Death Journey from Darkness to Light. And it's one of the most enlightening books about what a shared death experience is and what you learn, Sharon, in your own spiritual growth about that amazing experience, which is the real deal. And so let me just give you a little intro, you know, about Sharon. You know, you have an amazing practice. You're sort of a spiritual psychologist, but you also help people through their unresolved issues, no matter what, you know, they are. You do an amazing job. Your accolades are overwhelming. And so what you do is you also help people. One of the main things is through their own spiritual journey and through understanding their grief and loss of anything, not only a loved one, but losses, right? Am I on the right track here with you?
Yeah. Loss is loss. Grief is grief. You can't compare griefs.
Exactly.
You know, a lot of people try to do that, but it's all the same emotion.
Right. It really is. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Why don't I just read a little bit about my editorial review, just a little bit of what I thought of your book so everybody can see it. It's on Amazon. And by the way, I'm right next to Raymond Moody's editorial. So, hey.
He's my bud.
Oh, my God. What a lovely man. I'm so glad you guys are friends. But here's the way I describe it, because when I write it down, it helps me out. Becoming Starlight offers the most illuminating picture of a shared death experience, or SDE, as they call it. Such an inspiring and positive reading experience. And it is of great help to those who are grieving and ask, is God really out there? Sharon presents a palpable description of her incredible journey into love and light during her SDE, or shared death experience. She brought me to tears. I mean, it's really hard for me to get to those certain points. I'm like, oh God, here it comes. But it's amazing because I traveled from grief to hopefulness and back to faith from you, thank you, and some renewed joy as it pertained to the loss of many of my loved ones as well, sweetie. So it's very healing. So thanks for that. And it's your turn now. So what are some of the, you know, motivations that caused you to write this book? I mean, I sort of just, I guess I kind of did a spoiler alert, but what really are the motivations that made you say, I've got to write about this?
that I had to save my own life. And that propelled me into helping save the lives of people who were feeling the exact same way that I was feeling. As I said in the book, I lost my daughter, and then I lost my husband. And talk about an angry woman. I was, you know, I have said that when my daughter died, she died in my arms.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I begged and bargained and pleaded and
did all the Kubler-Ross things. Yeah.
With the God of my childhood, you know, the one that is thrown down your face from the
right. Right.
And I actually thought that that was real. And when my begging and pleading and bargaining didn't work, I realized that I wasn't being heard. And so everything I had believed my entire life to be true, I threw it away.
Right.
And then I walked through the world a very, very angry person, not really realizing that that anger was grief. A lot of people
Sure. Sure, honey.
But it's fine. It's very, very, very fine to define it as anger because it's, as we have said before, it's abandonment. And what does that do? You know, all the emotions that we feel over abandonment come into play when you've lost someone.
Yeah, absolutely.
I became a major control freak.
When we are out of control of our lives, this is what we have to do, or the faith, or whatever.
And, you know, I thought if I could control the universe, if I could control death, then nothing bad would ever happen again. And then my husband died. And it was, that was when my life changed, at that moment of his death.
Yes.
That's when I had what I had no idea what it was called at the time.
Right, right.
Shared death experience. It was Raymond Moody, Dr. Moody, that explained to me what it was. Because I had to find someone to tell me
what that was.
What that was. I made the rounds. I talked to rabbis and priests and monks. Right. And you name it.
Yes.
I made the rounds and telling everybody, what is this? What is this? What is this? And everyone had their own version, and they all made sense.
Sure.
But nobody could give me a name.
Right.
I wanted
until
to
you met Raymond.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I met Raymond.
That's amazing.
Raymond's like, oh, honey, that's a shared death experience. That's exactly what it was. He said, a near-death experience? I said, yes.
Mm-hmm.
He said, the shared death experience is exactly like a near-death experience. Only the person having it is invited along.
Right.
You know, to see what's happening. I joke about it now, Michelle. At the time, I didn't joke about it.
Sure.
I joke about it now, and I say, I think I was granted that experience for two reasons.
Mm-hmm.
One, I think when my husband got to that place, I call it that place. I don't call it heaven because that will immediately, when I say the word heaven, what do you think of? I don't want people to think of that.
Yeah.
And I think when he got there, he said to creation itself, God's spirit, whatever you want to call it, you got to give this woman a bone, okay?
Right.
You can see where we are.
Or right.
Survive it. And I think the second reason was God had finally had enough of me.
Enough, Sharon. Come on. Get with the faith. Get with the real
world. It was like, get up here. Let me show you. Stop all this.
Sure. Earth. Oh, that's amazing.
You know, so I got a peek. That's what I call it, a peek into
front. I absolutely love that. So if you could set it up for us a little bit. So your husband had been ill.
Yes.
Off and on for a while. And you'd sort of gone through the journey of caregiving and hope and faith. And you'd already experienced the loss of your daughter, which was horrendous trauma. So can you set it up for us and how this occurred, how the shared death experience occurred?
He had been sick for a long time. Matter of fact, it took 9 years before we even had a diagnosis for what was happening with him. There was no faith.
Okay?
There was hope.
Yeah.
Okay. But the hope was centered on me being able to control it. So that was like, okay.
Oh, you know?
Controlling the universe is something that humanity does not have the power yet. So... when we found out his diagnosis, they were doing exploratory surgery. And then they came out and told me what was going on. And they told me right then, if there was anyone that needed to come see him, they'd better do it right then because he wouldn't survive the night. And I remember thinking, you're out of your mind. This isn't going to happen. You don't know right. who you're talking to, you know. Long story short, 6 months. He lived for 6 months. We lived in the hospital. That was during the time when insurance companies didn't kick you out.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
That's right. That's yeah. right.
And it was a daily grind of medicines and more medicines.
Oh, sure, honey.
Yeah. You know, just sick. He was a big man, but by the time he died, he didn't even weigh 99 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
I couldn't touch him because every nerve fiber in his body was on fire.
On fire.
I lived with for 6 months. I didn't sleep. I never slept.
Yes.
But he had had a dream that he died in his sleep. And so I figured,
okay,
I'm going to stay awake. Because if I start to sleep,
right.
I'm up a little bit, you know.
Sure.
The last day of his life, that morning, he had a stroke. And through the next 10 hours, he had one stroke after another.
Oh, my gosh.
Left him unable to see, unable to hear, unable to feel, nothing. At least that's what he told me.
And was he at home, honey?
No. We were in the hospital.
Okay.
We were in the hospital.
All right.
I wanted to believe that it was true, that he couldn't feel. So I actually crawled up into the bed beside him because it was the first time I'd been able to hold him in 6 months.
Sure.
And turned the lights off. My mom and dad were in the room with us. And I just held him. And he slept. I'd been there all day long. And then about 10 o'clock that night, our oncologist, who was a very good friend of ours by then, came up to me and he said, would you mind moving your butt? go wash your face, go do something.
Get out of here.
Check his vitals,
Right.
I think he really wanted to check to see if Steve was still living.
Sure.
So I said, okay, went into the bathroom. And as I rounded the door into the bathroom, I heard my parents taking this deep gas.
Oh, boy.
And my oncologist say a few really cute words. And so I turned like crazy, almost fell. Trying to get out of the bathroom. He actually rolled over. He had actually rolled over. Which
oh my
was
gosh.
Possibility. Medical
right.
possibility. So I went to the left side of his bed, which was the side that he was laying on. And I got down. So I was nose to nose with him. And he was staring right at me. And he could see me. And, you know, that's when you say the most profound things you've ever said in your life, you know?
Right.
All I said was, what are you staring at?
Brilliant.
What are you staring at?
You're going, what?
Yeah, but you know what?
Sure.
At that moment in time, in my mind, I'm going, I won. I beat death. I beat it, you know?
Yes.
And when he responded, I took in a deep breath because it was so shocking. My oncologist was standing right there. Mm-hmm. Jaw hitting the floor. And I took in a very deep breath and closed my eyes just for a second because I'm feeling, I won.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And then when I opened my eyes, I saw that there was no light left in his eyes. And I knew he was gone. And then I knew I had lost. And at that moment in time, that was when I finally got it. I finally understood the word surrender.
Yes. My goodness.
Finally understood that word. People don't understand. They think surrender means failure.
Right.
But it doesn't.
Right.
And I finally surrendered. And at that moment, I have said before that something just propelled me up on my feet. I have no idea what it was because I didn't have the strength to stand up. I didn't even know who I was anymore, you know?
Right.
And here's what I explained to Dr. Moody, and so he explained it back to me. Like, oh, yes, no big deal. Well, I know what this is. You know, the floor started to disappear, even though I knew I was standing on it. The ceiling started to just turn to mist, even though I could see it. Okay? And it was just
strange. Oh, my God.
Just strange. And then the stars. That's why the book is called Becoming Starlight.
Oh, my God.
Because it's like a billion stars. I mean, I don't even know how many. I have said that I didn't know where starlight began and I ended, or where Starlight ended and I began, because I went right into it. There was a presence, Michelle.
Yes. Yeah.
And I felt it. And I said it felt like home.
Wow.
And I wanted that peace. It was peace, which I hadn't felt.
My gosh. Yes.
In so long. And I was wrapped in this starlight, in this presence.
Yes.
And all that anger and all that grief and all everything was just taken from me. I did nothing to get rid of it. Absolutely nothing to get rid of it.
Yes.
It was calming and peaceful and magnificent. And I said before, you could string together every good word that you made ever come close. Steve was there. He was there.
Yes.
And I knew he was fine. And you know, when he left, I was not allowed to go any farther.
Uh-huh. And okay.
I was held in place.
Okay. And he was moving where? Where was he moving?
He was moving to where he belonged. Okay. And I had no business. I had no place where he was going. I didn't belong there. But you know, it was okay.
Yes.
I didn't even feel the need to say goodbye. I loved nothing. I just, everything was exactly the way it was supposed to be.
Right.
And I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that he was going to be with our daughter.
Oh.
He was where he was supposed to be, and I was where I was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that whether this was consciousness or some other form of creation that we haven't touched yet, some kind of awareness or I still cannot find the word for what that is.
Right.
But eventually, of course, I had to come back here. I know it sounds like when I say come back, that it was a specific thing, but
it
wasn't. It was just everything started to go back.
Right.
You know, without me doing a thing.
Right. You just called it pulled away from the stars and the whole kind of environment or plane or whatever you were in, that vibrational.
It started to pull away from me because I would have stayed there forever.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And I tried to get back.
Mm-hmm.
This is a funny thing. I tell people this, and it's so hard. It's hard to even admit to myself. When I first got started in my practice, I started with the death and dying and the grieving.
Right, right.
It was a very selfish thing that I did. Yeah, it was, because I was doing it more for me than for them, because I kept telling myself, if I'm with somebody at the moment of their death, maybe I can ride and go back.
Yes, exactly. Right. I want that feeling again.
I want that again. Of course, it never happened.
Right. And then
eventually, of course, it was healing my own self, realizing what grief really was, and realizing the just the joy and the hope and the regaining of faith in the reality. Okay.
Yeah.
Faith in the reality that I found was totally different.
Oh.
Than what I thought.
Yes. And you can't even describe it, really. I mean, it's when you have an otherworldly or, you know, whatever it is, it's almost like you went out of beta consciousness and you popped into that hypnagogic state or that, you know, if you want to call it a theta kind of a. I mean, you lost all sense of your now in this third dimension.
Everything. I've been doing a lot of theta healing, a lot of theta training.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
As you know, the way the theta teachers teach this, traveling through these different planes. I know this is very woo-woo, but it's all about healing, and it's all about connecting with our own divinity within our humanity, you know, that co-joining.
Yes, exactly.
You know,
I do.
Yeah. Nah. That's so important for us to be.
I totally understand. Right.
Yeah.
You know, the theta thing too is sort of, it's getting out of our own way when we're in high beta, as they call it. You know, we have to get out of our own, you know, streams of consciousness and got to do's and what, and that's meditation, of course, when we can pull into that. But, you know, and it's scientific when we can stay in that theta and we can do, it removes us from this world. It removes us from everything and gives our brain a rest in order to, that's where we get in touch with, I think, maybe, perhaps those other I don't know, the quantum consciousness, if you want to call it that or whatever.
That's the whole thing, you know. I practice sacred word. Prayer, sacred word, and then you bring the theta into that. And what happened with me really was at my daughter's death when my entire belief system crashed.
Ah, right.
You know, crashed.
Yes.
And it took me forever because nothing felt real. Nothing felt
right. Yes, exactly.
And so theta is the same thing. Is it changing your very being?
Right.
By getting rid of all of these belief systems, the labels we wear.
Yes.
You know, that have been put on us from the minute we're born.
Sure.
It makes a difference in the way we live our lives, physically, mentally.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Every way you can think of.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And by the way, guys, in case you just tuned in here, if you're on our LA Talk Radio Facebook Live show or else on latalkradio.com, Channel One on the couch here. We're talking to Sharon Prentice. She's a doctor and she has written an amazing book. It's called Becoming Starlight. It's a shared death journey from darkness to light. And it, basically, if you missed the first part of the interview here, Sharon's talking about what exactly she experienced when her husband was passing in the hospital. She was right there with him and went on that journey into where he was going. It was... she was conscious. She was aware. She wasn't hallucinating. She was right there with him. And really, so I think, does that have something to do with connection to that individual? Or do you suppose we can have a shared death experience with someone who we love but are not connected with or there in person?
I don't know. There are people that have actually been on the other side of the universe. That was one of the questions that I asked Raymond.
Yeah.
I wish I had an answer
for
that. What has happened, though, is that a lot of people have actually had these experiences, and they were not as fortunate as I in discovering and becoming friends with Raymond.
Right.
What's happening now is that people are starting to speak up and are actually using the SDE research as a basis for NDE research. Because you can't say that it was us, you know, losing oxygen or whatever it is that they say with, you know, the medical explanations for the NDE. Because if you look at the SDE, you go, you know, wait a minute. No, that's not going to work. Mm-hmm. So a lot of research is being conducted on the SDE to help explain all the you know, experiences that are out there.
Sure, exactly what that's about. So to inspire others, what... Obviously, it was an amazing experience. And what did it do for you that made you just completely open up and have faith and hope and positivity about the afterlife?
Opened me up to possibility. And I would use the word possibility because it's more than.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But for me, talking to other people,
yes,
I don't ask anyone to believe everyone.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Sometimes go, yeah, okay, because they're closed. I was closed. I was very closed.
Right.
Okay. But when I say, can you entertain the possibility?
Right.
You know, that makes a huge difference because as you and I have spoken before, one of the first things to go, people don't like to admit this, one of the first things to go when you're in the midst of the process of dying is your faith.
Right.
That's one of the first things to go because you don't understand. You know if you're good and you do everything right and blah, 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 you're going to live to be 3,000. Well, guess what? It doesn't happen that way.
Right.
When death comes not in what we consider the natural order.
Exactly.
There's anger and there's all of these things, which are fine. So to say to someone, can you entertain the possibility, let me tell you a story, to open them up, that actually relieves some of the grief that goes along with the process of dying. And I say the process of dying because that is very, very different from the moment of death.
Right.
And my experience helped me see that.
Yeah.
you know.
Yes, exactly. And that's beautiful. And you said you don't, you know, force anyone to believe or, you know, whatever it is. You just share this as an experience. And I know you encourage others to read about the science behind and the studies behind that as well. And no matter what someone's, you know, religious orientation is or belief, this applies. I mean, it's okay because, you know, people have versions of the afterlife. Yes. It happens and, you know, where they go. But this was an experience that has been described by many people, but not as much as the NDE. So I think that's so awesome that you were able. I mean, it just blows me away that you were able to go on this amazing journey with Steve and just let him enjoy his journey wherever he went. And
well, yeah, and like I said, I do a joke about it now. In the beginning, I didn't, because I tried to figure out why me. Why was this given to me?
Right.
I know so many people who, oh my God, they're like saints in this world.
Yeah.
And never have any type of experience. And then there's me who used to cuss God out every 2 seconds. And, you know, and anger. And, you know, I closed myself away and wouldn't listen to anybody. So for this to be given to me, I used to say, why? On earth. And that's why I say, Steve said to God, you got to throw her a bone. And he was like, okay, enough of you.
Yeah, right. And so you learned some things from that. I mean, you learned these concepts that, you know, they're like reading in your book, and you say that they're just concepts. We're not our thoughts or desires. We're just concepts based on something outside of ourselves.
Yes.
So how can we reach out and grasp all that's within us, you know, in order to, as you describe, you say, open up that exhaustless light of love? How do we do that with everything going on in the world, especially in the past year and fear and poverty and things like that? So
it all goes back to that one word, surrender.
Yeah.
Until you surrender all of the things that you have been taught to believe. You know, Wayne Dyer, God bless him. He was a mentor of mine, and I loved him tremendously. He's actually the one that convinced me to write Starlight.
That's amazing.
We were sitting in a hotel in Fort Lauderdale on the floor eating bananas and talking about all of this. And that type of experience, when it opens you up, is very difficult for people to truly understand. He used to tell a story, short story.
Yeah.
That, you know, you get pregnant. It's like, oh God, take care of our baby. Make sure everything's fine. 10 toes, no illness, blah, blah, blah. And then the minute that child is born, the parents say, good going, God, we'll take it from here. Okay? Which is true.
Sure.
Because at that moment of birth, you have your name, you have your religion, you have where you're going to live, you have what school you're going to go to, you're going to, you know, how you act, the whole generational, traditional stuff. And we grow up believing that.
Yes.
And in order to get rid of that, you have to surrender it all. And surrendering it all can lead to a loss of identity.
Right.
What? It's in that loss of identity that you find your true identity. So I teach people about sacred word. And if sacred word doesn't work for them, then we go to centering prayer. And then there's always meditation and all of these different things.
Right.
Get to the point where they have that, what I call that sacred moment.
Yes. Yes.
Like, hold the fort, people. You know,
right.
I have to put my own dancing shoes and do my own dance.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
That's when surrender comes in and you start to see, this is who I was born to be.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Beautifully said, sweetie. And I think that, I mean, man, I think that the driving force behind that, of course, is fear. You know, we fear the unknown, and everybody wants to control. As you said, we all need control over our lives, and there's crippling anxiety, as you know, as a doctor, a psychotherapist, the generalized anxiety disorder has become almost like an epidemic since COVID, right? Everybody's, well, what if this or what if this happens? What if that? And we're always trying to control the future because we're creating literally the worst case scenario so we can be prepared to control everything in our life.
You know, I said something in this book. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt it. I said something in the book that I have repeated more times since COVID started than I have since forever. In the book, I made the statement that living in fear of death has the unintended consequence of living in fear of life. And that is exactly what we have been doing.
Yes.
Over the last year, everybody has been so afraid that we're living in fear of death. So nobody has reclaimed, you know, their lives. And like you said, the fear, the anxiety, the anger, the loneliness, all of those things are, you know, up here somewhere. And it's tragic. And then add to that, I've lost a lot of people to COVID.
Sorry.
But you got to remember, a lot of my people had problems going into it in the first place.
Right. Right, exactly.
Yeah. But dying alone.
Oh, no. I mean, how awful. But I mean, I guess it's what they had to do, you know, to keep everyone safe. And
well, I went in whether they wanted me to or not. Sometimes we went in the back door, which I did. Somebody would call me and say, you know, so-and-so was put back in the hospice. And I'd say, okay, I'll be there. And they're like, well, I say, okay, well, and I take my key and I go in the back door.
Yeah.
Because I never let any of my patients die alone, ever.
Good. You're a doll. No, that's wonderful. I mean, it's just beautiful because, I mean, they do need someone to be there to hold their hand or just to know that, you know, they're there.
Just to know someone's there. I mean, a lot of people think birth is the most sacred time of all. It's not.
Right.
Death is the most sacred time of all. You know,
right. And I think, you know, Becoming Starlight, your book, is a wonderful way to help people understand. And I'm not going to do any spoiler alerts here because your journey of the way you explained what you learned and because of your remarkable experience of, yes, there is something going on after this supposed consciousness in this physical body. It just brings people hope and the fear, you know, that has been spread, especially we've all, you know, it's a universal consciousness of fear. Some people are in denial about it, but I mean, you know, it's not a big deal. I'm not going to be affected by it, but just the fear that we've heard from the media and experiencing friends and loved ones and friends of friends and just things and patients that you and I have had as well.
It's sad all the way around. It's eventually every single patient I've had that came for illness has said to me, should I be afraid?
Yes. Yes.
That's when I say, let me tell you a story.
Exactly. Exactly.
And they are really, they and Wayne are the reasons that Starlight existed because they would all say to me, can you write this down? So when we're not with you, we would have something to refer to. So the book was actually meant to be for my patients, and then somebody shared it, and then somebody shared it, and somebody shared it, and pretty soon the grief community, especially people who have lost children.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that is the most painful thing, as you share in your book, Becoming Starlight, A Shared Death Journey from Darkness to Light. Speaking about darkness to light, and you know, on the subject of COVID, I mean, there are some amazingly positive messages that we've, you know, gotten from all this, and we don't really know. We have, of course, theories and, you know, the conspiracies and all that about where it came from. You and I have our own theories, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, sometimes I believe there are always reasons why these things happen, and you know what we as world consciousness have to learn. This is a worldwide plague, and it brought humanity together.
Yeah.
So I think so. So what are some of the awakenings you believe people experienced from the COVID pandemic, and how does that sort of compare to your trying to awaken others in their own just letting go of fears?
The biggest thing that I have found and that I felt, I knew this already for me because I've worked on this for so long, but with everyone else, we had to face our own mortality. The world,
yes.
Everyone in the world had to face their own mortality. That's bad enough. But then when you look at who you love and you're seeing their mortality,
Okay,
all of a sudden, everything becomes prioritized. Okay, social media. Okay, people about the losers or whatever they call it, the new car, this or that. Do you know how many people I'm seeing minimize now?
Yes.
Their houses, their stuff, people cleaning out and, and getting rid of because they're spending more time with family. They're actually having dinners together.
Wow, what a concept, right? Yay! Yes, exactly.
People went, we go through life.
Yes.
Not ever looking at our own mortality. Yeah. We don't.
Right, we don't.
We're not wired that way.
No, no.
And then when it's forced upon us, which is what COVID did.
Yes.
It made people look at themselves and look at their lives.
Yeah.
And go, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, I could die. What would happen to my kids? Or, oh my God, this could happen to my mom, my dad, my children.
Yeah.
You know, and then there was a lot of going on in the houses.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think also it learned people to be a lot more spiritual and say, I better reckon with my own stuff, whatever that is, religious, you know, beliefs, or I had better, because of course we went to virtual, whatever, churches, synagogues, lectures, you know, pastors, you know, it was all virtual, which was kind of bizarre, but I mean, that was very inspiring to a lot of us, but, I think a lot of religious upbringings for me, one, is that God is separate from us. You know, whoever that entity is, perhaps not an entity, perhaps an energy. And what do you say to people who really believe that there is a separate entity that is outside of us, that who we have to beg and pray for, just like you did? You know, you lost faith. You said, God, I'm done.
You want me to keep it clean? You want me to keep it clean?
Yeah, you know, you don't have to keep it clean. We're on LA Talk Radio, honey. you can say whatever you like.
You know, here's the thing about that. Yeah. I believe that, Michelle. I believe that there was this guy, you know, the Charlton Heston guy from Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
You know him?
That's right. That's exactly right.
I believed him, and I thought, you know, if I do everything right, I'm okay. But if I do anything wrong, he's going to throw freaking lightning bolts down at me. And it's
right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And coming to find that that was not true. That was a false thing.
Right.
The truth. When I realized, the mystics taught me a lesson. Now I'm a beginner.
Yes.
I mean, I know what I don't know. Okay. I don't even know what I don't know. There's so much I don't know.
Well, you're humble.
It's the absolute truth. But when they talk about the heart of hearts, you know, that place, that real place inside you where only God and you are allowed to be, you know, that your divinity, your humanity coming together with your creator, you realize that there's no separation. The only separation there can be is a separation that you do. And I most certainly did it.
Okay. Yes.
I kept this massive separation because I was angry.
Right.
So angry.
Yes.
And I had to keep it that way because I had to have somebody to blame.
Sure. Of course. It's part of the process of grief as well. Yeah. No, and I hear you. I think that's beautiful. And I, you know, some of the people listening and watching out there, you know, who are, you know, very religious, saying, I pray to my God every day. And I say, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, prayer is very powerful, as are affirmations that we really do believe in.
Yeah. Here's the thing. People get very angry at me when I say this, but I've seen it for 30 years. I've seen this for 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The people who I pray to my God, all that stuff, they're the first ones that lose their faith. True.
Right.
They're the first ones to question why, Okay. And so for them, they're not only losing someone that they love, they're losing someone who's been so important to them.
Right.
And that's where that word surrender comes in, surrendering to the fact that, and I really feel this way. I mean, this is for me.
Yes.
I believe that organized religion misses the mark. I really do, because they do teach the separateness and the, you better not do that, okay?
Right, exactly.
And that, to me, my dad used to tell a story that I wrote about in the book that, you know, long story short, you send your kid out to play, and they're gone all day, and they come home, and they're muddy, greasy, and dirty, and hungry, and all of that, and your dad brings in, sets you on his lap, and says, hey, honey, tell me about your day.
Right, exactly.
That, for me, is creation. That's God.
That's right.
And I say this to people.
Yes.
There is no place that God is not. No place.
That's true.
Okay? And that includes, we are his very thoughts. How? And this is a question that I ask everybody, and oh man, this is a set up debate.
Yeah.
How can a loving God who made us,
right,
his very thought to put forth in the universe,
yes,
judge us and condemn us and all of these other things?
Yes.
Love
yes.
doesn't condemn love.
Right.
And and that's what we are. You know, he was like sitting up there thinking, I know I'm personalizing it here.
Right.
Sitting up there thinking, this is the way I want to be in the world. Snap. Here's Michelle. That. Here's Sharon. This is the thought I want people to see of me.
Right.
You know, he's going to condemn that.
Right.
No, I don't get it.
No, I hear you. Not at all. And the source, whoever you, higher power, source, quantum consciousness, God, whoever you want to call, you know, I think we are here. We are that. And we have that spark of life. You know, you've talked to, I'm sure, I have a lot of friends who are ER doctors, psychiatrists.
Yes.
Who have said to me, I've seen something in the room. I've seen in the dark. Yep. I've come in and I've seen, I know when at their time of passing or leaving the journey, into the journey, out of their body, I've seen a spark. I've seen something.
Yes.
And I can't describe it. And it's, I know that there's something else going on.
Yes.
Because it's like, okay, out of here. Boop.
Yep.
So that's amazing to me.
It's so real.
Yes.
You can, a lot of people don't see it, but more people feel it. But it's not, here's where it gets a little sticky.
Right.
When I say they feel it, it's nothing like you've ever felt before. So you can't.
You can't describe it.
Like I said, I felt that I was going home.
Yes.
But to describe that, humanity has never come up with a word. For what that is. So what are you going home to? Are you Are you going home to a place? Are you going home to the beginning of that thought of God that you are? I mean, what are you? I still have a ton of questions.
Sure, exactly. No, I hear what you're saying, but you know, my point too was that is the part to me that it makes us part of Source, God, whoever, that's the part within us, the spark that says, okay, I'm coming wherever, I'm going home or I'm going wherever to whatever. And I don't even want to get into the life after life thing, perhaps, but I mean, to maybe learn more lessons. My belief is that we come here, we choose to come here, and we are here placed into certain situations to learn lessons, whether painful, as you experienced, joyful moments, painful moments, whatever. And it's more as a human soul or whatever you want to call it, that spark of light, that consciousness that we all have that can travel with us after the body is no longer useful, that it's the journey, it's what we need to learn in this time. And perhaps we'll come back to learn more. Perhaps we learn more when we're out there or whatever, wherever we're at.
I don't want to go back.
Maybe you're gonna have to.
Oh yeah.
You might need to though, honey. You know?
Here's the thing too. You asked me earlier. I would not be who I am. I would not be doing what I'm doing if it wasn't for those two got off a horrible experiences, I would still be walking around just thinking, you know, everything that wasn't real, because I am so not that person anymore. Sometimes I look back at that and I'm like, who is that?
Isn't that nice? Isn't that nice though?
It took, I'm one of those people that you gotta knock me down before I listen. It's so funny. I tell my family now that listen to the whispers. Okay.
You're right.
Because if you don't listen to the whispers, you're going to get this massive horn in your ear and it's going to knock down your ass. Being knocked down.
Exactly.
Before I would listen and do what I was meant to do.
Right.
That thought that I was.
Yes. And that's beautifully said. And that also emphasizes the importance of us finding, you know, having intuition and finding our purpose, whatever that may be, to give. That's what it's all about, really, huh?
Yeah.
It's love and finding that purpose. And that's what you are doing so beautifully and giving so much other in your sister and your books. Which I won't talk about, but those books that we not speak of that are coming up. as well in the Becoming Starlight, a shared death journey from darkness to light. And it's just amazing. And the work you do in your practice as well is just mind blowing. What you've taught your patients and what you've brought your patients to.
It's important. You know, I'm not just saying it's important because I don't do a lot of people do this.
Mm-hmm.
But as you and I have spoken before, my goal is to get people, I'm talking about the terminal families now, not the people who come to me for marriage or whatever, is to get them out of living in that moment of death.
Mm.
Because that is denying the whole rest of someone's life.
Yes.
Wow. And when you get stuck in that moment, that's all you see.
Yes.
And the grief is overpowering, and you then deny the joy and the happiness and the crazy things that you did together. And, you know,
so
you got to get out of that. And that's what I try to do is get Pete. If I can just get a toe.
Yes.
That
yes.
moment.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Do not betraying anybody.
Right.
By living again.
Oh, beautifully said, sweetie.
You know, that's so important. Especially for the people who lose children. There's nothing in the world like it. And you still have to be a parent to other kids. You still have a thought to live out.
That's right. Exactly. And your book, you know, is just amazing in helping others understand and the possibility of what really is going on and your real experience. And again, there's no religious pushing or, it's not any woo-woo stuff. It's what you experienced. And I encourage everybody to pick up Sharon's book, Becoming Starlight. It's amazing. And what's the best way? It's your website is drsharonprentice.com.
Nope, just plain old sharonprentice.com.
Oh, you're so humble.
No.
Come on now. You're so-
you know, it's funny. I used to tell people all the time when somebody says, Dr. Prentice, I turn around and look to see where someone in my...
What are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly. Because I'm also known as a sweatshirt doc. Do you love that?
I love it. You wear those sweatshirts?
I didn't know that until we were at Farmers Market. I kept hearing some kids saying, hey, sweatshirt doc. And I realized when she came up to me, he tapped me on my shoulder. And I'm like, what were you calling me? He said, that's what we walk by. I'm like, why? I wear sweatshirts. And you know what I do? I have sweatshirts in every color.
There you go.
I do that because I get thrown up on a lot and a lot of tears and all that. And we're talking chemicals. We're talking
That's right. That's right.
And it's easy to rip off a sweatshirt and put on another one.
There you go. And there is something comforting about a chill sweatshirt, and it's nice, warm, and comfy, and it makes others, besides your wonderful self.
I crawl into bed with most of my patients. And just I'm like, get away from me. Because people want that human touch. You know that's so important.
It's so true, sweetheart. Oh, I do.
Yeah.
That's what it's about, sweetheart. And it's just about that time for us to wrap, but I thank you so much, as always, for blessing me with being on your show. You're the best.
Oh, thank you. You are wonderful, and I love your book. Anytime. I'm really happy we got through this. I'm doing nothing except laughing the whole time. So this is good.
I know. We did. Isn't that amazing? I know. We did well. We really did well. The book's called Becoming Starlight, Dr. Sharon Prentice. Check it out. Pick it up. It is a journey that you will absolutely learn from. It's a great read, well written, and you won't want to put it down. It's a real page turner. So, all right. Thank you so much, Sharon.
Thank you, honey. I'll talk to you
soon. Love you. Bye. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me here on the couch today. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen. And as I always say, take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for others. Thanks for joining me. Bye-bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.